Well, brethren, it's wonderful to see all of you. This is the first time I've been at one site for an extended period of time since really the series began. And it's really special to get to talk to so many of you at length here for the first time with my wife and keeping the feast. And it's really been a wonderful experience. From the messages to the fellowship to the venue, this is an extraordinary place that God has placed his name. Well, what I want to talk about today has been touched on in previous messages, and it's really a hot button subject right now, but really it's been a subject on the minds of humans since the time of Adam, and that is freedom. Freedom. The U.S. is all about its freedoms. Oh, we're a First Amendment, Second Amendment country. We have freedom of speech. That's why the work of God can be done in America. There was quite a debate surrounding our freedoms through COVID. Could the government really mandate that we stay indoors? Did we really have to wear masks? And on and on and on. Now it's at the core of conversation politically, core of conversation medically. But it's nothing new. We're promised in the United States Constitution life, liberty, freedom, and the pursuit of happiness. The Star-Spangled Banner speaks of the home of the free and the land of the brave. And the home of the brave. We're a nation, we're a people that value freedom, but it really transcends the United States. Freedom is a universal subject. I come from Richmond, Virginia, the former capital of the Confederacy, and there's a long and terrible history associated with that city and what it represented. Great numbers were held against their will and forced to work. In some senses, there is no greater an injustice. Yet we think of slavery as a thing in the past. It's not. According to the UN, there are actually more slaves today than at any other time in history. Whether it be in forced marriages, forced labor, trafficking, most horrible kind, child trafficking. More slaves now than ever before in history. Now, you might think that's just because the population has increased, and yes, that's a large part of it, but why is there even a single slave? Why is anyone held against their will? Well, we know slavery is broader than just people knowingly, wittingly being held against their will. We know that the world is ultimately held captive to the God of this world, the prince of this world, as it's put in John. The prince of the power of the air. That being who deceives the nations. We have a booklet, A World Held Captive. We understand that the world is not free. They think they're free. They think they're living the good life, doing whatever they want. No one's telling them what to do. They champion their liberties in this country. I'm not saying liberty is bad in that sense. There are wrong elements and right elements. It's very much a mixture of good and evil because of that tree that our first parents ate from. But we understand captivity, slavery, bondage extends to the whole world. There is a master slaveholder ruling earth. And things are not going well under this captivity. I have here an article from 2020, late 2020, October 21st, 2020. I'd like to spot through it. Now, keep in mind, this was written before Russia invaded Ukraine. This was written early in the pandemic by some measures. And it's titled, "Don't Worry, the Earth is Doomed." Don't worry, the Earth is doomed. A brief list of the existential and catastrophic risks facing the human species, and I would add, under this captivity. Catastrophic risks are events that threaten human livelihood on a catastrophic scale. Most are interconnected, meaning that one event, such as a nuclear detonation, and remember, again, written before this massive escalation of conflict overseas, before the tense language that is in the news every day regarding World War III, a nuclear escalation of the conflict between NATO and Russia, such as nuclear detonation, is likely to trigger others. They're interconnected, like water and food crises, economic depression, and world war. The intricate interdependence of our physical, social, and political systems have left humans vulnerable, something that COVID-19 has highlighted. And then it lists first some near-term risks. Autonomous weapons, the first. High risk in the next 10 years. Well, they came with the war. This article was more right than they could have known. High risk in the next 10 years. Fully autonomous weapons didn't exist yet, but advances in drone technology and AI make them more likely. Rogue code and irresponsible use could lead to mass violence on a scale and speed we don't understand today. Next, cyber attacks and information infrastructure breakdown. Another thing we've seen since this article is written. Foreign entities impacting our power grid, attempting to penetrate our military installations. High risk in the next 10 years. Hacking the transport system or a central bank would wreak havoc and threaten public safety. Prevention relies on education about cybersecurity, educating people about cybersecurity. There's data fraud and theft. Then here are some long-term risks. Extreme weather. Okay, the earth is being destroyed. We do see catastrophes. God is upset with those who destroy the earth. We have the most balanced view on climate change, global warming, what's happening to our earth. We understand what's going on under this super captor, if I could put it this way, this master slaveholder. There's catastrophic climate change it lists here. Biological and chemical warfare. Again, written before that was a hot-button issue. Very prophetic article in a certain sense. Artificial intelligence concerns. Up to a 10% risk in the coming century. The catastrophic risk associated with AI, and this was well before these chatbots emerged that we're seeing and talking about, and that have good uses and bad uses. The catastrophic risk associated with AI hinges more on misuse or poor development than on concerns about computers overtaking human society. Algorithms that spread fake news and create echo chambers could undermine trusted information sources and leave democracy even more precarious than it already is. Left unattended, these bots can spit out seemingly very credible information that's simply riddled with lies. In an era where you already have difficulty believing what you see on TV, what you hear on the news, even what you read in print, what is this doing to augment our disbelief in what it is that our eyes see and ears hear? How destabilizing is that to this society, again, in captivity? There's ecological collapse, food and water crises, pandemics. When is the next one coming? Asteroid collision is one of those listed in these catastrophic or long-term risks. Then it breaks down ultimate doom. That's the subhead MIT gave this one. Ultimate doom. Supervolcanic eruption, nuclear warfare. The world's nuclear nations have over 13,000 warheads between them. They give it a 1% risk. Well, I would venture to guess, had this been written after Russia invaded Ukraine, it would have been given a little higher than 1% risk. The world's nuclear nations have over 13,000 warheads between them. In a nuclear winter, soot and dust released by fires would block sunlight, leading to global cooling and mass extinction. And collapse of democracy is the next. How much has occurred in the time since that has left people talking about that, particularly in this nation? And finally, the sun consumes earth. And according to the author here, that is certain. In about 800 million years, earth will become uninhabitable for humans because of the expansion of the sun. About 6.5 billion years later, the sun will expand enough to consume the planet in a fiery end. Now, they don't know that God's kingdom is coming. They don't understand what we understand. They don't understand this world will actually be freed from these strongholds that are tearing it down presently. The world is ruined, brethren, under this master slaveholder. It's not going to be ruined. It's already ruined. We've reached the point of no return. God's kingdom must come. Now, we're the people who wait. We'll wait however long we have to. But God's kingdom must come to turn the tide and free humanity from its captor. The feast, actually, brethren, is all about freedom. I'd invite you to consider that perspective. Here in Leviticus 23, we'll turn there. We'll see the feast is actually about freedom. At its fundament, we're here rehearsing freedom. And I'm not just talking about how free we feel here keeping God's feast, where he's placed his name, the abundance we have because we obeyed God during the year and saved our second tithe. I'm not talking about the ability to walk down to the wharf here and see brethren all around and band up with them and go to dinner and enjoy one another's fellowship. In one sense, it's the freest time of year because of how extraordinary an experience this is with our brothers and sisters. No, I'm speaking of here in Leviticus 23, we'll start in 39. A different kind of freedom. Also in the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. That's what we're here doing. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath, high days. And you shall take you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and the willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. Now, we're not going and collecting those species, but we're certainly rejoicing. And you shall keep it a feast unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths 7 days, temporary dwellings. These are beautiful temporary dwellings God has blessed us with here. You shall dwell in booths 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths. Why? That your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. We're here remembering when the Israelites came out of Egypt, when they came out of slavery, when they came out of hard bondage. And we're picturing a time when the world will come out of slavery, out of hard bondage, out of captivity to the God of this world. The Feast of Tabernacles is all about freedom. Freedom. It's a time of freedom. What we're going to do today is get that vision of freedom in our minds. We want to sear into our minds the freedom that God is going to bring to this world that desperately needs it. And if we can catch that vision of what future freedom will be like, we'll be more motivated to seek after it. We heard about seeking the kingdom of God on opening night, cultivating that vision of what's ahead. We're going to do it through the lens of freedom today, looking forward to the only thing that can bring that freedom, the kingdom of God. Thinking more about vision after the opening night, I was looking up quotes by various people, and I found this one, and it speaks to our purpose here today, cultivating this vision, catching that vision of freedom. Steve Jobs, a man of extraordinary vision in this world, one of the great innovators of our time, said, "If you are working on something exciting that you really care about, you don't have to be pushed. The vision pulls you. The vision pulls you." The more real we can make the freedom that the kingdom will bring, the easier it'll be to pursue that kingdom. The vision will pull us. We really care about what we're involved in, if I can borrow from the quote. We really care about what we're involved in, and that vision will pull us. Now, freedom, on the other hand, is not easy to come by. We're free. We escaped the God of this world. We're in the process of escaping this world. We are not there yet. But you know how hard it was to get here. You know how hard it is when you're called. The resistance you face. I know I faced a lot of resistance, and I've talked to many of you. We're all in the same place. Freedom is hard to come by. Einstein said, "Freedom in any case is only possible by constantly struggling for it." It's a constant struggle. Look at the struggle that ensued in this country over the very issue of freedom some 150 years ago. Now, the gateway to all freedom, every freedom that we're going to talk about, is sitting on your laps right now. It is the golden key. We were captive in Satan's world until we understood the truth. Turn to John 8, the truth. The gateway to all the freedoms we're going to talk about is this first freedom of truth. John 8, verse 31, then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, if you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed. We continue in his word. That's what makes us, that's a huge part of what makes us his disciples, his followers. And you shall know the truth if you do the word. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him. They understood what he's talking about. They understood the concept of freedom. It was evidenced by their answer. They answered him, we be Abraham's seed and were never in bondage, meaning slavery, voluntary or involuntary, to any man. How say you, you shall be made free? What are you talking about? We're already free. They didn't understand that they too were subject to Satan's wavelength, that they were held captive by the great kidnapper. Jesus answered and said, verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever commits sin is the servant of sin. We saw how to escape that vicious cycle yesterday. How to get free on a personal level. But we're talking about freedom for everyone right now. We're free in a certain sense. Yes, there's more to do, but we're already free. What is the world going to look like when it's free as a whole? If we put in the effort, we're going to see. If we ensure we remain free to the very end, through that four-step process yesterday, we'll find out. We'll see it with our eyes. But God records it in advance for us here. Verse 34, whosoever commits sin is the servant of sin, and the servant abides not in the house forever, but the Son abides forever. If the Son therefore shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. There's a process of conversion that we understand that allowed us, that gave us that freedom. I know you are Abraham's seed, but you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. The truth has no place in you, so you're not free, Christ told them, and it angered them. I speak which I have seen with my Father, and you do that which you've seen of your father. Free. The truth shall make you free. It means to liberate. That is to exempt from liability. We're free from sin, but a much greater, not greater, but a different kind of freedom is soon coming to everyone. And the truth is the gateway to it all. The world will soon be free from confusion, the confusion that trapped us before we were called. Turn to Habakkuk 2, please. Habakkuk 2. We often turn to Habakkuk to look at technical matters. Sometimes it's helpful just to pull back and realize what God is soon going to do. Live in an unbelievably exciting time. Habakkuk 2 and verse 13. Behold, it is not of the Lord of hosts. He doesn't like this. It's not his purpose that the people shall labor in the very fire and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity. Is it not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labor in the very fire and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity? You know, there is punishment. Sometimes God allows people to labor under fire. It's not our purpose to get into specifically when this is prophetically, but sometimes God does bring that punishment, that judgment. Why? For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That's what God ultimately wants. He wants the earth filled with his knowledge. And if people reject it, they'll be punished, as this verse shows. But ultimately, God doesn't want people in a fire. He doesn't want them under duress. He wants the earth filled with the knowledge of his glory as the waters cover the sea, everywhere. The world will soon be free of confusion. We long, brethren, for when the world knows the truth. If you're anything like me, and I know you are, you can't wait for that brother or sister to understand what we understand. You can't wait for your mom or dad to see this the way you do, the way I do. You can't wait for the day that your child's eyes are opened and they understand how they should be living. We long for that. That desire pulls us toward what it is we're seeking, the kingdom of God. It'll be a beautiful time. Hebrews chapter 8. Hebrews 8. Right now, we feel out of place. Or at least we're viewed as being out of place because our beliefs are so obscure. Our beliefs are so strange in contrast to what everyone else believes. But that's not going to be the case in the very near future. The world is going to be freed from confusion. Hebrews 8:10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts. And I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord. For all shall know me from the least to the greatest. Imagine when everyone, not the brethren you come into contact with at this feast site, when everyone you come into contact with at this feast site will know the Lord. What a beautiful time. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. In that he says a new covenant he has made, the first old. Now that they which decay and wax old are ready to vanish away. God is doing away with the modern way of doing things. Everyone will soon know the truth. Everyone will be free of the confusion that so grips the world. How is this possible? Well, it's because of us and because of our willingness to be set free. He's going to use us to do that. Isaiah chapter 30. He's going to use us to free the world. We'll get more into that later. But for right now, Isaiah 30, verse 18. And therefore, Isaiah 30, 18, and therefore will the Lord wait that he may be gracious unto you. And therefore will he be exalted, that he may have mercy upon you. For the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him. For the people shall dwell in Zion at Jerusalem. You shall weep no more. He will be very gracious unto you at the voice of your cry. When he shall hear it, he will answer you. Real-time interaction with God. And though the Lord give you the bread of adversity, thinking back to Habakkuk, sometimes it's God's purpose to punish. Though the Lord give you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet shall not your teachers be removed into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers. God is cultivating a group of highly trained teachers. And a very important part of that is what we're learning here at the Feast of Tabernacles as we come together to learn to fear God and rejoice. We have to be here in order to be a part of this, in order to free the world. And your eyes shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk you in it, when you turn to the right hand and when you turn to the left. Well, the only way we know which way is the right way and which way is the wrong way is, again, because we've sat here in God's church for some length of time and learned what is right and wrong. That's the only way he's going to entrust us with such a privileged responsibility, bringing his truth to all people, freeing the world from confusion. And when that happens, the world will have a real change of heart. The result of learning the right way is verse 22. You'll defile also the covering of your graven images of silver and the ornament of your molten images of gold. You shall cast them away as a menstruous cloth. They'll understand, whoa, we've been way off track. The truth is what sets us free. Not these lies that we believed for lifetimes. All mankind. Not just our generation. And they'll say, get thee hence. They'll be disgusting to them. Then shall he give the rain of your seed, that you shall sow the ground withal, and bread of your increase of earth, and it shall be fat and plenteous. Truth is the gateway to everything we're going to talk about, to everything we are talking about. In that day shall the cattle feed in large pastures. The oxen likewise and the young asses that ear the ground shall eat clean provender, which has been winnowed with a shovel and with the fan. And there shall be upon every high mountain and upon every high hill rivers and streams of water in the day of the great slaughter when the towers fall. Yes, it involves punishment to usher in this time. Moreover, the light of the moon shall be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun shall be sevenfold as the light of 7 days, in the day that the Lord binds up the breach of his people and heals the stroke of their wound. A better time is coming. The world will be free from harm. That's the next element we'll look at. Free from harm. Right now, the world is gripped by harm, by hurt, coming from almost every source imaginable. We're here in Isaiah. Turn back to chapter 11. Again, a verse we look regularly at, but let's not look at it from a technical perspective right now. Let's look at it from a perspective of, wow, God is offering great hope for everyone. The world will soon be free from harm. Isaiah 11:1, and there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, and the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, and the Spirit of counsel and might, the spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord, the same spirit that we'll exercise, and he'll make him of quick understanding in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears. That's how we'll interact with those vast billions we'll come into contact with. We won't be doing it on human steam or logic. No. We'll have this spirit guiding us. When we're God, we'll be spirit. But with righteousness shall he judge the poor and reprove with equity for the meek of the earth, those who need it. And he'll smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked. And righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. Perfect harmony, perfect peace. The world will be free from harm. I was preparing this message, finishing up this message this morning, and I went out onto my balcony, and one of the other brethren who is staying adjacent to us was on his balcony observing the squirrels. I went out there because I wanted to see the squirrels, because every morning, until this morning, they didn't come onto my balcony today. But every morning, I'll go out there and give them some nuts, and I've gotten them within about a foot and a half of me, and it reminded me of when I was a child. You know, right now, animals hurt each other. My cat, a little Japanese bobtail, killed a mother squirrel, and I knew there were little squirrels up in the tree, so I climbed up there, and I got them out of the nest and brought them inside, and they began to look to me for their food, and you know, they'd climb up on my shoulder and eat Cheerios, and I just thought it was the greatest thing as a kid until my dad said he was taking them to the squirrel farm, which now sounds very suspicious in hindsight, but I don't think he enjoyed the messes that they made. But my cat ate their mother. You know, that's a much simpler or a much more tame version of a bear dwelling alongside a cow, or however it put it here, the wolf with the lamb. But even a cat can't dwell with a squirrel this side of the kingdom. That's going to change. Can you imagine nothing hurting or destroying? I got to tell another story now. This bear... got to thinking about it. My uncle was an engineer, my dad's, I think, oldest brother. He lived all over the place, and he was quite a character, just a different man. I took in squirrels. He was in Iran, I think, building a dam, and he found a bear cub in the woods, and he took it home and started to raise it from its youth. And it eventually got so big, it was friendly, but it would come and give him the bear hug, as it's called. It would latch on to him, but its grip was so forceful that he realized this is starting to get dangerous. And what he would have to do is take his thumbs and jab it into the side of the bear, and then it would kind of open its arms, and he would, you know, take a step. Oh, I just stepped back off this box here. Wow, I just got a shot of adrenaline. Wow. Give me a bear rather than this. I mean, this. But he said, it's time to, you know, release the bear. This bear is going to get angry if I jab my thumbs into it one too many times. You know, animals are dangerous. This all flows off of that first point of truth. Verse 8, and the suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for because, this is the reason, the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The truth is the ultimate gateway to these freedoms. Freedom from harm here. Isaiah 65. You know, I love the feast because a lot of the time you hear the same scriptures over and over again. But who can get tired of hearing about this kind of stuff? It's the vision that pulls us forward. Isaiah 65. Verse 17. For behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind, but you be glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy, and I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people, and the voice of weeping shall no more be heard in her, nor the voice of crying. Free from harm. There shall be no more thence an infant of days, nor an old man that has not filled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old, but the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. And they shall build houses and inhabit them, and plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. Talk about slavery. Talk about being taken advantage of. Building and then other people enjoy what it is that you've produced. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain nor bring forth trouble. For they are the seed of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them. And it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. And while they're yet speaking, I will hear. God will be very close to all mankind, and through us will be that vehicle he'll use. And that closeness to God, that closeness to his way and his truth, is what yields what's in verse 25 here. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock, and dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, says the Lord, because they know the truth, because they're living the right way. But it'll extend to more than just animals, this peace. Turn back to the second chapter of this book, Isaiah 2. It'll extend to far more than just animals. The word that Isaiah saw, verse 1 of Amos, the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it, and many people shall go and say, come, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he'll teach us of his ways. Many people be eager to learn God's ways and will walk in his paths, in great part due to our example. They'll be eager. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he'll judge among the nations and rebuke many people. Now, that's the path to ultimately understanding. And they'll beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. You know, that author gave nuclear war a 1% chance prior to the current showdown between Russia and NATO. In many regards, that's the scarier part of what's going on. apart from, it doesn't in any way diminish the tragedies of war, but the prospect of open conflict between Russia and NATO is now far above 1%. That 1% was assigned well before the conflict even started. There won't be a 10% chance, a 1% chance, a 0.5% chance. There'll be zero chance of not just nuclear war, but conventional war, or even skirmishes. It's not going to happen anymore. No one's going to be harmed or hurt in God's kingdom. O house of Jacob, come you, here's the key again, verse 5, let us walk in the light of the Lord. You know, we operate with the lamp of God's word. His word is a lamp unto our feet. Imagine when that lamp is active in every person's life who will pay attention. Imagine when everyone is functioning under the light of that lamp. Micah 4, parallel account. It's so clear why this is possible, why this can happen. We'll go down to verse 4 here in Micah 4. We read the parallel in Isaiah. But they shall sit, every man under his vine and fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Again, how is this going to happen? For, verse 5, for all people will walk everyone in the name of his God, and we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. They'll be looking to us as gods, looking to us for the guidance that only we can provide, because we've put in the time this side of the kingdom to educate them, to instruct them, to show them the paths of the Lord that will free them from the slavery they now endure. That was freedom from harm. And this next one we'll look at is related, but freedom from pain. Pain. I'm sure there are a lot of you in this room who endure chronic pain. I've battled it at times. It can make life hard. It can make life miserable. But pain comes in all forms. You have physical pain, emotional pain. You look around at how some people have to live their lives. They don't understand what we understand. And you see people made in God's image out there who are handicapped, who are mentally ill, who don't have someone to care for them. They're in great pain. They might not even understand the pain they're going through. I have another uncle. My dad was the last of the brothers, but another uncle who I was also very close to, he was, by all accounts, very healthy, very talented, very smart young man, until at age, I believe it was 11, go back to none shall hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. The age of 11, a dog bit him on the butt and threw him to the ground, and it damaged his brain. And he was somewhat retarded and lived with epilepsy for a lot of his life. And it affected him emotionally. He was prone to outbursts, and he actually pushed my grandmother, who was his caretaker, into a window, and she hit her head, and she died in her 90s. But you look at that, and of course it made me incredibly angry, but at the same time, something's fundamentally wrong with this man's brain. And then he was left to kind of fend for himself in the house. His caretaker had died, and a few years ago, because he's not adept at cooking and things like this, this was in Lebanon, doesn't really know what's going on. He was trying to increase the fire in the stove that you cook on in the house. It's just a wood stove. And he sprang a bottle of alcohol into it to increase the flames. And it came back, ignited, covered his body with third-degree burns, and 3 days later he died in the hospital. So that's just one of my stories about people that I'm looking forward to getting a fair crack at life. Would he have killed my grandmother had he not had his head slammed on the ground? No, he wouldn't even be living with her. I'm not justifying what he did. But so many people are hurting in so many ways. And it eats God up to see that. It eats us up to see that. And he's far more emotionally dynamic than we are. We're all his children. Can you imagine looking down and seeing your children suffering some of these things? Some of the things we suffer, some of the things people who are not yet called, some people who are not yet on track to be in his family. It has to fill him with deep emotions that probably we can't even fully comprehend. Back to Isaiah chapter 61. We've learned a lot about the precise guidelines Christ received when he was sent to preach the gospel. Isaiah 61:1, "The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted." Those people deeply afflicted with pain, emotional, psychological, whatever it may be, to bind up the brokenhearted. Brokenhearted there means the burst hearts. Think of heart-bursting pain. The burst hearts, to proclaim liberty, freedom. That's what this is all about, to proclaim liberty to the captives. Not just physical captives, but those who are spiritually captive. Those who are captive to this God of this world, who runs this present evil world. Liberty to those captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound. Verse 2, "To proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn." That comfort will provide freedom. "To appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness," the feeble spirit, "that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he might be glorified." It's quoted again here in Luke chapter 4. Let's look at the parallel, the New Testament parallel in Luke chapter 4. Some of these words are just so rich with meaning and underscore what we're talking about. We'll look at it in Luke as well. Luke 4, "And he came to Nazareth," Jesus, "where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah, and he read what we just read. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it is written, 'The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor, the good news of the coming kingdom of God to the poor. He has sent me to heal,'" meaning cure, "'the brokenhearted, Now, brokenhearted there meant burst hearts. Here it means those who are crushed completely. Those who are shattered. We've all been through shattering experiences. We've all been crushed in certain ways. There's some people who, that's their life. They don't have Sabbath services. They don't have the truth. They don't have brethren that love them. They don't have this awesome plan of God as revealed in the holy days that allow us to come and participate in something like this. There are some people who are chronically crushed and shattered. And our hearts burst for them. To preach deliverance to the captives, the recovering of sight to the blind. There's a malady. To set at liberty, to free those that are bruised, those that are crushed, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. That was Christ's goal and mission. He wanted ultimately to free people. And that's our goal and mission too. Let's look at Revelation chapter 7. Picture of the great multitude is there after the 144,000 are complete. Verse 13, and one of the elders saying unto me, what are these which are arrayed in white robes, and whence came thou? Whence came they? Where'd they come from? This is after vast billions will have made the right choice. And I said to him, sir, you know. And he said to me, these are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he sits on his throne and shall dwell among them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto fountains of living water. God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. They won't have to hurt anymore. They won't have to hurt anymore. Chapter 21. They'll be free from hurt. There's coming a time, brethren, and again, it's not our purpose to get into the technicalities of the timeline. There's coming a time when this will come to pass. And I saw a new heaven and new earth, for the first heaven and first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell among them. And they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain. Finally, everyone will be free of pain, for the former things are passed away. Verse 7, he that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. So much of this pain is from the past, from unshakable memories. When we move past things, we do our best to forget and move on. But it's so hard. It's so hard to do. Isaiah 65. Isaiah 65. A merciful God isn't just going to free the world from pain. He's going to free us from memories of pain. Because those very memories often rear their ugly head. And we relive those horrible moments. Those horrible times. Isaiah 65. Verse 16, he who blesses himself in the earth shall bless himself in the God of truth. And he that swears in the earth shall swear by the God of truth, because the former troubles, the former tightness, it means, are forgotten. And because they're hid from my eyes, God will forget them, and he'll grant us, he'll grant people the ability to forget those memories that can so weigh us down. I mean, you've experienced it, I've experienced it. Imagine all the collective memories of all mankind. Matthew chapter 5, Matthew 5, we will be free of pain. This includes us too, in a big way. We've been through a lot if we're in this room. God has allowed us to go through a lot if we're in this room. And a lot of it wasn't easy. Matthew 5, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. We can sometimes feel like we're poor in spirit. Blessed are they that mourn, that grieve, for they shall be comforted. Comforted there means called near, invited, invoked, consoled. Ours is the kingdom of heaven. We'll be free, we heard also about this, we'll be free from corrupt leadership. Now, it's not our purpose as brethren to single out different leaders that we take issue with. Their conduct speaks for itself, but we can certainly look at what the scriptures say in a broad sense. Micah chapter 3. Micah chapter 3. A horrifying picture of how people are taken advantage of, how the common man, the common woman is taken advantage of at the expense of leaders. Micah 3:1. And I said, hear, I pray you, O heads of Jacob, and you princes of the house of Israel, is it not for you to know judgment? Now, this applies at various times in God's plan. It has application. Who hate the good and love evil, who pluck off their skin. Here's a graphic word picture of people being taken advantage of. Who pluck off their skin from them and their flesh from off their bones, who also eat the flesh of my people and flay their skin from off them, and they break their bones and chop them in pieces as for the pot and flesh within the cauldron. God is extremely angry with how people are being taken advantage of down here. His children, who he ultimately wants every one of them in his family. He's upset about it. That's why Luke 22 comes into play here. Luke 22. It's not just Israelitish leaders. Luke 22, Verse 25, Christ said unto them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and they exercise authority upon, and they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors, ruling with an iron fist, subjugating. But you shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he that is chief, as he that does serve. And maybe your goal was to serve more. We're a people who are about serving others. Ultimately, we're going to serve everyone who's ever lived, everyone who will ever live. That's what we're in training to be. Not those corrupt leaders that live off the backs of those who are struggling to make ends meet. No, we'll be those who are helping them. We'll be the ones who are guiding them, the ones who are teaching them the path to life. Very, very different. We'll be those judges and kings that we heard of. Another thing the world will be free from is hunger. Hunger. Maybe one of the worst kinds of pains. One of the most visible kinds of pain. When you see the pictures of, for instance, emaciated Holocaust survivors or those who perished, you're left really without words to describe what you're seeing or what you're feeling or what they must be feeling or seeing. You know, I sometimes have trouble going to sleep if I don't have some food in my stomach. I can't imagine the sleepless nights of hunger. You know, we just fasted for 24 hours on the Day of Atonement, and you don't feel great at the end of that. Imagine that was a weekly thing or a chronic thing for people. Not just fasting because they wanted to draw close to God, but because they don't have food or water. And sometimes it gets so grave that it occurs for days on end and then they just die. It's unfathomable to those of us here in a prosperous nation. You can't really comprehend it. I remember hearing about when the Ottomans swept into Lebanon, there was a great famine, and the Turks forced able-bodied men to, there was a famine and there was a locust plague, forced able-bodied men to go out and every day to collect, my great-grandfather had to do this, if I understand the story correctly, to collect a large basket of locusts to try to stem the plague and turn them in order to get some rations to be able to eat. It's incomprehensible to us. Maybe some of you are from foreign countries where you've seen it directly, but someone like me, I can't wrap my mind around it fully, that level of hunger. But the world is going to be free from that. God doesn't want that. The kingdom is going to free mankind from that. Isaiah chapter 7. Verse 19, and they shall come and shall rest, all of them in the desolate valleys and in the holes of the rocks and upon all the thorns and all the bushes. And that same day shall the Lord shave with a razor that is hired, namely by them that is beyond the river, by the king of Assyria, the head and the hair of the feet. And it shall also consume the beard. some challenging language there, but here's what we'll focus on. And it shall come to pass in that day that a man shall nourish a young cow and two sheep. Everyone's going to have a ribeye in their yard. Yeah, sometimes we focus on agricultural blessings. This is the kind of agricultural blessing that I'm looking forward to. The cow and the sheep. And I know with the power of God, we'll be able to dial ourselves down to enjoy a steak. So we don't want to get over that, do we? Nourish a young cow and two sheep, and it'll come to pass for the abundance of milk that they shall give, he shall eat butter. For butter and honey shall everyone eat that is left in the land. Great prosperity. Great prosperity. Psalm 81, verse 16. If you want to turn there, you can. But God said if Israel entered the promised land, he would have fed them with the finest of wheat and honey out of the rock. That's a picture of the kingdom. Can you imagine honey dripping out of a rock and anyone being hungry on earth? No. Oh, I'm hungry. I need some lunch. Let me go to the local restaurant. No, let me go to the local rock. Or let me wander off to some random neighbor's house that I've never met before because no one can hurt or destroy in all the holy mountain and share a meal with them. And maybe it's ribeye day there. Rain will come in due season. Zechariah 10. We take rain for granted. 10:1. Ask you of the Lord rain in the time of the latter rain. So shall the Lord make bright clouds and give them showers of rain to everyone grass in the field. The world will be verdant, lush. You know, I'll tell one more Lebanon story. I'm on a roll here. They started popping into mind because you think of the contrast of what people have versus they don't. I remember one year I went and my cousins were eager to show me something. And I'm hamming it up a little bit, I think, but this is pretty well how I remember it. They were eager to show me something. I thought, wow, what must they have? And they took me over this shady spot in their yard, and they showed me, like they were unveiling, it was a patch of grass. And they told me, this is American grass. Because nobody has grass over there. They thought it's something just great. They have a patch of grass, maybe about 2 meters by 2 meters, and they put a plastic lawn chair in there, and they would sit in the grass and invited me to sit in the grass. And I'm just thinking, wow, just wait till you have to start cutting it. And then you'll burn it to the ground, and you'll want it like everybody else's. All your neighbors here have it figured out. We're confused in the U.S. I didn't rain on their parade. Well, rain on their parade, terrible. No pun intended. Yeah, rain is coming, and the earth is going to be verdant. Christ summarized the first iteration, before even the new heavens and the new earth, as paradise. Paradise. Paradise is short of what's ultimately coming. Because the world will be free from hunger, free from the scourge of agricultural-related punishments, agriculture-related punishments, the most critical of which is lack of rain. We're ultimately, brethren, going to be free from this fight, this great fight of afflictions that we fight. We'll be free from sin. We'll be like God, who can't even be tempted by sin. We'll be able to rest, as Paul put it. which is ultimately going to leave us, and anyone who ultimately wants it, free from human frailty. Job 14. Another verse that we look at in technical senses, but is very appropriate for the feast here. Job 14, verse 13. Oh, that you'd hide me in the grave, Job asked, that you would keep me secret until your wrath be past. He understood what's coming. He didn't want to be a part of that. And he was enduring wrath in his own life too, but he didn't want to be a part of what's coming. Until your wrath be past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. You'll call and I'll answer. You will have a desire to the work of your hands. Job knew he was going to be freed from the human condition, freed from the ability to be hungry, free from the ability to be plagued with boils, free from the heartache of losing his children, having his wife turn on him, and on and on and on, types of so many of the things that we go through. We know that we who wait on the Lord are going to mount up with wings as eagles, run and not be weary, we'll be free from this human condition, walk and not faint, won't be tired. Just traveling to the feast can leave some of us tired. We're frail. We're humans. We'll be free of that very soon. We'll be satisfied when we awake with God's likeness. Turn to Psalm 17 as we begin to come to a close here. We're going to escape the human condition. Verse 15. As for me, David said, as for me, I could put my name in there. I'm sure you'd put your name. I will behold your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied. Filled to satisfaction, it means. When I awake with your likeness, when I change, when I, along with the rest of the 144,000 and in your family, David is saying, we know we go first. But we'll be filled to satisfaction. He that has begun a good work in us is faithful to perform it, Paul said. Now, brethren, we have a certain liberty right now that the world doesn't have. It's what sets us apart from the world. And let's turn to 2 Corinthians 3:17 to see that. While you're turning there, I'm going to read one thing from Galatians additionally that Paul said. Stand fast, be stationary, persevere therefore in the liberty, the freedom, the freedom wherewith Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. We're learning the fear of God so we don't go back to that world, so we don't go back into captivity. We have achieved a certain level of freedom in God's church, shown here in 2 Corinthians 3:17. Now, the Lord is that Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. God's Spirit either resides in us or is working with us. There is a freedom that we right now enjoy. Now, it's going to be taken to the next level very soon, when that freedom expands in that we escape the shackles of the human existence. But it's also coming to everyone, everyone who's ever lived and ever will live. Final scripture, Romans chapter 8. You and I are part of something borderline incomprehensible. We're going to free the world, under God, of course, from the clutches of Satan, from the clutches of sin, from the clutches of misery, pain, hurt, all those categories we looked at. Romans 8, verse 18. I reckon that the sufferings of this present time, anything we go through that we will ultimately be freed from, are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willing but by reason of him, not willingly, but by reason of him who has subjected the same in hope. Because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage, from the slavery of corruption that is afflicting this world at large, into the glorious liberty, freedom of the children of God. We have the down payment of eternal life now. We have that spirit residing in us. Soon we'll be spirit. For we know that the whole creation groans and travails in pain together until now, captive until now, needing freedom until now. And not only they, but ourselves also, which have the first fruits of the Spirit. We're not completely free yet. We haven't fully made it. Even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting for the adoption, to wit, the redemption of our body. Hopefully we have a vision that makes us groan evermore, that makes us long evermore for that kingdom, for the freedom that will come with it. Brethren, God freed us, and He is going to fully free us very soon, so that we can help free the world, everyone we personally know and beyond that. We'll free them in so many ways. The glorious liberty, freedom of the children of God is coming.